Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Thank you for listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm Duncan MacLeod. I'm joined for a second time on the podcast by Vox CEO Jacques Dutoit. Jacques, I think you're the first person to feature twice on our podcast, so welcome and thanks for joining us again.
Thank you. Very glad to be back.
I know you've been very busy in the past few months on everything from the Internet of Things to fiber deployments, etc. But before we talk about some of those specifics, if you don't mind, maybe give us a view on where the telecommunications industry is in South Africa at the moment and what you expect is going to happen this year.
Duncan, I think we ahead of us lies some very exciting times. Last year, a lot of speculation was around consolidation in the market. Unfortunately, we didn't see any real activity. But as of the start of this year, there's already been lots of rumors about one entity buying the other, wireless companies being sold to fixed line, some of the smaller fiber providers scaling down. And I think for me what's starting to crystallize is 2 years back we spoke about vertical integration. Mm-hmm. We took a bet and said we believe the right thing to do is to own the underlying infrastructure and then add your services on top of it. Different mindsets around that concept, but from what I'm seeing today, that's definitely becoming a reality. And Vox, together with Frogfoot, is leading that space. We've had 3 years head start on top of anybody else, and we can see that the other guys, the other fiber operators, are now starting to apply their minds to get into services.
It's interesting that you've decided to go for that vertically integrated approach, because certainly as recently as 18 months ago, many of the players in the industry were saying that that's not the way to go. We need to look at open access. We need to focus on what we're good at, not trying to build this big vertical stack, which is perhaps the model that was favored in the past by the big incumbent telecommunications operators. But you say the market's changing.
Let's unpack that for a minute. Frogfoot is positioned as an open access network provider, completely independent to Vox, regardless of the fact that we own them. And Vox will procure services from Frogfoot in the same way that any other ISP will.
Right.
Why chase vertical integration on the services layer? Well, there's a few reasons. First of all, we want to lower the cost to the customer. If you keep on buying from the middleman, everybody just adds margin. So you want to lower that cost, lower the barrier to market. The second thing is you want to position yourself to be as agile as possible. If there's always a middleman somewhere in the middle, you can't act and react to changes in the market. And I guess those are the two reasons why we've decided to own as much as we can and vertically integrate.
Okay. Now you mentioned the consolidation you were expecting would happen in 2017 didn't really materialize. That consolidation may materialize this year. Is Vox going to be playing an active role in that consolidation?
Absolutely. There's lots of talk on the go.
Yeah.
And what we're finding is that any fiber player that's finding himself in a little bit of an island will be in trouble in the years to come, because you don't have scale, you don't have the ability to expand your network on the back of an existing infrastructure. So from a price perspective, you just won't be able to compete.
Right.
And we hope to really lead that that drive in the industry.
Are there specific areas in your business that where you've perhaps got some gaps that you're looking to plug, or would any acquisitions you make be to build bulk in the organization?
I think there's two main areas. From a fiber perspective, we will continue to grow by means of building network or acquiring companies in areas where we dominate. And that's typically in the Western Cape, Pretoria, Pretoria East. There's also some activity happening now in Bloemfontein, Richards Bay, Empangeni. So in those areas, we will put a lot of focus in. If there's a smaller player that's keen to sell to Vox, we'll definitely look at an acquisition.
Okay.
If we look at the services layer, I think it's fair to say all the old traditional voice, PBX, SMS, TMS, those are boring services these days. If your business is built around selling a PBX, I think your days are numbered. So we will continue to look at products and services that differentiates and adds an enormous amount of value to a customer. You know, the other day I spoke to a customer, I said, why are you moving away from one of the bigger telcos to Vox? And he said they lost their relevance with me. Mm-hmm. That's a harsh statement, and it's actually something that I think about every day. The moment we don't play a real significant role with our customers, that's where your big churn risk will come from. Mm. And I think, so, and we will talk about some of the other products in a minute, but that's where our growth will come from, buying services and product that differentiates us.
Okay. Now, you're building cloud services as well. You've got data center facilities. I'm interested, the arrival of international data center providers, Microsoft Azure data centers launching here in South Africa in the coming months, rumors that Amazon may consider doing something similar down the line. How does that affect players like Vox?
There's definitely risk.
Yeah.
It will drive prices down. But as I said in a discussion the other day, there's a place for everybody in the market. Let's talk Google as an example.
Yeah.
You can host with Google if you want to, but who do you phone to come and give you advice in your business? There's no one to phone. You go onto the website, you provision a service, buy a mailbox, but there's no person that can come to you and say, right, I understand your business, I understand the market pressures, let's provide you with the following solution made up of 10 components. And I think as long as we're not trying to be everything to everybody, we'll be safe. You've got to pick your market, pick that niche, and deliver a product and service stack to them that's valuable.
Okay, it's almost like a consulting type of service.
No doubt that a telco has got to play a consulting role.
Right, right. And these big international players probably don't have those local skills. Definitely. To be able to help local business.
They're targeting the mass market, online buying, online processing, self-help services, no consultation whatsoever.
Okay, so you might even direct, in some cases, business towards them while consulting to the company.
Which we do.
Yeah.
I mean, there's in part of our consultation to a customer, we often find that certain elements is better suited to where you can procure from a Google or from a Azure, where others you'll get from Vox.
All right. All right. Well, let's talk a bit about your fiber rollout. I think last time we spoke, you talked about targeting smaller towns where other players have perhaps neglected. You mentioned Richards Bay and Empangeni. I think there was a figure you attached to your fiber rollout as well, something in the region of 500 million rand, if I remember correctly.
Correct. So we invested 550 million last year into our fiber network. But more exciting for me is that investment allowed us to grow our coverage area from 3,700 square kilometers to 18,000. Now, 18, let me just qualify, that's not fiber running in a street on each side of the street. That means we've now got nodes established in strategic areas around the country, and we will now start building from that node outwards, originally focusing on FTTB, and that will then expand by default into FTTH. But what that's done for us, it's now unlocked economic value in all the smaller towns. Mm-hmm. You know, we could previously do nothing in Parys, Klerksdorp, Potchefstroom, where we've got agents in those areas. We weren't able to offer an agent anything to sell linked to fiber. Now we can say, here's a node, it's built, it's live. Yes, the initial installation might take 6 months, but it's better than having
And these are your nodes?
It's our nodes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so you'll pull fiber out from them. Focusing on business primarily to start?
To start,
okay.
Correct.
Okay. How big is Frogfoot's fiber to the home capacity at the moment, or footprint rather, and how do you see that expanding in the coming years?
So by May this year, we would have passed about 26,000 homes, and our order book has got a total of 90,000 homes in. We've actually tried to slow down a little bit on the FTTH part.
Okay.
FTTB, we've passed about 11,000 buildings, and just for this year, we'll get to another 12,000-15,000
Okay. And are those...
And remember, that's a building. That excludes any multi-tenanted building. So you can effectively multiply that 14,000-15,000 with another 2.5 to to 3 to get the number of potential businesses we can touch.
Okay. So is your primary focus then on the smaller towns, or are you also rolling out infrastructure in the big urban areas?
So we'll continue with Western Cape and Pretoria, and then aggressively target the smaller towns. It's a neglected area.
Yes.
Those customers are hungry. They're hungry for technology. They're hungry for advice. They're hungry for fiber. Telkom, unfortunately, is doing nothing to maintain and keep up the existing services, ADSL, Diginet. Mm. It's lost on their radar from a rollout perspective. So you're unfortunately limited to the local WISP.
Yes.
And what does the WISP do? He builds a local network and he aggregates that on 4 ADSL lines.
Yes, yes.
I mean, slow. The experience is really poor.
Yeah. Yeah, so so demand you're seeing in the smaller towns, what sort of businesses are taking it up? Where's the demand coming from?
Duncan, we're very fortunate. We've managed, with the help of Frogfood, to design various levels of packages. So there's packages designed for the retail outlets. Let's, as an example, your Techie Town, your Cardies, you know, the real small organization. And then we've got business-grade packages all the way up to a gigabit service. Mm-hmm. So what I do see, the ARPUs in the outlying towns are slightly less than in the metros, and the take-up is a little bit slower. You know, we will get a 30-40% penetration in any area in the main suburbs within 3 months. There it takes 5 to 5.5 months. Mm-hmm.
And that sort of take-up is sufficient to justify the rollout?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
No, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And... So in urban areas, I mean, there's a lot of fiber has been rolled out in urban areas already. Are you duplicating any of that infrastructure?
No.
So you're only going where there's no fiber already in place.
Now, I think anybody today that duplicates, you are out of your mind. I mean, we should all embrace rapid deployment.
Yeah.
If there's an open access provider, let's duplicate where there's no open access provider. Mm. So we know that Vodacom, Telkom Retail, MTN don't subscribe at this point in time. They talk about open access, but no one's got a contract with them selling on their open access network. Where they are, I'm happy to build and approve a build on top of them. Where there's true open access providers, or Octotel, Avuma, DFA, you're crazy. There will always be a loser.
And you already sell on top of all of those
guys. You sell on top of those, yeah. And why spend money knowingly that you'll never have a 70, 80, 90% penetration?
Because
that's just fact. It won't happen.
Yeah.
Rather go to an area where no one has built, get in there quickly, sign the customers up, and maximize penetration.
Mm. And make it available in open access. Anyone can come
Correct.
In and sell
services.
Correct,
we subscribe to that,
yeah.
And funny enough, what we're seeing are that all the fiber providers that are currently in distress are the ones that built second or third.
Mm-hmm.
There's just not enough customers for them to maintain a sustainable network.
Mm. Interesting. I mean, I remember speaking to some of the big incumbent telco operators maybe 4 years ago before Vumatel came in and the fiber to the home deployment started happening. And the sort of general view in the industry amongst the big players was that the economic model, it just doesn't exist for fiber, particularly for fiber to the home deployments in South Africa. Do you think it's fair to say that they've been proved wrong?
It doesn't exist for them because their build cost is roughly anything between 5 and 10 times more than what we build at. And it's not because we use different technologies. It's just that we build more efficiently. We roll out faster, we roll out in the right areas, we don't duplicate, where it just seems that they don't apply that same methodology.
Is it because they're big bureaucracies, or what's the issue?
I don't think it's my place to comment on that. No, I'll tell you a few mistakes they're making.
Yeah.
Some of them are duplicating teams, so they've got a business team separate to a residential team, but the areas are adjacent to each other.
Right.
So they don't capitalize on any efficiencies. Right. They duplicate 100% the services. The other mistake they're making is they're rolling out too fast. So I know one of the big players have actually, they've continued to with the civil work, but they've stopped floating fiber in the civils. Now we've gone to them and said, listen, I think you should consider, or can we propose that you sell your civils back to Vox or to the open market? Because if you don't do it, we're going to build on top of you, and then you're going to spend waste more money by floating fiber when your budget is available. And it's just amazing that that principle makes sense, but the ability to execute doesn't exist.
Interesting. Jacques, let's talk a bit about IoT, Internet of Things. We haven't spoken about this before, so maybe take us through what your thinking is in the IoT space. What's the opportunity? Are you building a network?
No. No, so we, as you know, there's four networks in South Africa. You've got Sigfox, the network operators, Squidnet. Then there's approximately 13 LoRa networks that I'm familiar with.
In South Africa?
In South Africa.
Good grief.
But the downside to that is none of those networks are talking to each other, if I can put it bluntly. So it's all closed little networks in a specific area. Vodacom rolled out narrowband IoT, and MTN's busy with LTE. I think it's M1, if I'm not mistaken. LTE M1 and narrowband IoT, GSM-based, is expensive, but there's a specific application for that. I think where we're finding it difficult is to educate the customer to say, when do I decide to use narrowband versus Sigfox versus LoRa, etc. There's definitely a place for each of that. At this point in time, our preferred network, just because of the cost and the coverage and the cost of the hardware, is Sigfox.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean we can't develop platforms and integrate on any of the other network operators.
Right. So have you partnered with DFA on that?
Squidnet.
Or Squidnet, which is part
owned
of DFA.
By DFA.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah.
From a, if I can then position the call it, let's talk about this, the market stack. You've got the hardware vendors, and they generally make up about 20% of the value chain. You've got the network operator. They will make up about 12% of the value chain. And then the balance, the 68% that's left, will be made up by the integrators and the solutions provider. And I think that's the key here. If you've got to have a single platform that various devices can connect into. And what amazes me the most is customers will, they say, show me your platform. They want to see the app on a phone. They want to see a website interface. But the real value lies in the workflow and the artificial intelligence that sits behind it. And no one actually ever sees it.
Mm.
You know, it's one thing to look at my phone and see where my asset tracker is moving around. But it's of no value if it didn't notify me at the right point in time, if it didn't kick off the right workflow. And I think a lot of people are going to be caught with their pants down if they didn't spend enough R&D on developing those two components.
Right.
I'd like to give you an example. Our animal tracker. It's the functionality is not limited to just is the animal within or without a geofenced area. We actually measure the animal's temperature. And we start to trend that temperature fluctuations. And not many people know that if an animal is about to fall ill, his average temperature will drop by as much as 2 degrees a day, day and a half before he actually falls ill. So you can now, ahead of time, 2 days ahead, inform the farmer and say, listen, I think your prize bull is going to be sick on Wednesday, you know, and you can save roughly 70% on veterinarian costs by just catching that ahead of time. And that for me talks to the artificial intelligence, the self-learning. That's where the value lies in AI.
So have you started to deploy IoT solutions into the market already?
Yes, we're focusing on five areas.
Yeah.
Asset tracking, animal tracking, water and electricity metering, water level metering, and then a very interesting concept called OBD, onboard diagnostics, from cars. We pick up information out of cars. Now, I'd like to use two examples to show you how we can upset this whole market and the thinking. Today, when we rent a car, we all pay, if you rent a Class B, the rate that I pay and that you pay and that the next man in the street will pay is all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we change that whole concept and say, Mr. McLeod, thanks for renting a Class C car. Your rental will only be determined when you return the car, and that's going to range between 400 Rand and 2,000 Rand. You take the car, you leave Oliver Tambo, spend the day driving around, and throughout the day we collect bits of data. And depending on your driver behavior, load on the engine, braking, areas that you went into, on your return, we provide the rental company with a file that puts all of that together, that classifies the driver, and they then determine what your rental fee for the day is. So if I look after the car, I'm in a safe area, it's in a basement, I should get the car 499 Rand for the day.
Yeah.
If you drive like a Kailami driver and you're in the worst parts of town, you should be paying 2,500 Rand. That's just from a rental perspective.
Yeah.
We can do exactly the same with insurance. calculate the premium on a daily or an hourly basis. I know Discovery has tried to do something similar, but we can extend that much further than what they're doing now because we collect data real time. And then the last part in terms of the vehicle industry that we're trying to address is car dealerships. Now, every 15 minutes, at least every 15 minutes, we can get diagnostics from the car. Let's say, as an example, your brake light fused. How nice would it be if the dealership phones you up and say, Mr. Detoy, I see your brake lights fused. Based on your geolocated information, I can see you operate in the Waverley area. We've got a Toyota branch in Corlett. There's a bulb available, and there's a technician. Please pop in there anytime, and he will fix it. I mean, that's taking customer service to a next level.
Yes. It's game-changing stuff.
And I think that's where we want to position our IoT product offering. You know, how much value can we add?
Mm. Interesting. I mean, there's a lot of work that you'd have to do on the back end in terms of support.
It's actually very simple.
Really?
Super, super, super simple. Collect the data. The biggest trick comes with understanding what the customer really wants, the potential user.
Yeah.
Because, you know, our target market has never been exposed to IoT. The exposure to machine-to-machine communication was limited to GSM, the GSM module, which is expensive, the GSM data rates that's expensive, and the GSM SMS cost that's expensive.
Yeah.
IoT turns that on its head. I mean, the devices are on average $60 cheaper than traditional GSM. Connectivity is ridiculously well-priced. We're talking in the region of 150, 200 Rand per year, not per month anymore, per year. So to get that concept across to a potential user and expand his mindset to say, okay, I could do this in the past and it was limited for the following reasons. Now there's no limitations. What else can I do? That's the hardest part.
What's the size of the market opportunity here?
When I researched the market, it was very interesting to see that Intel predicted by 2025, there'll be 220 billion devices. Gartner, who we all believe is the bee's knee and, you know, what they say is gospel, predicts 8.5 billion. So all I know is it will be billions. Where between 220 and 8.5 billion it will be, I'm not too sure.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think we're talking hundreds of millions, even in the South African market.
Yes, yes. And limited to the cities initially, I'd imagine, just because of coverage issues?
So Sigfox right now, or SquidNet, has got 81% population coverage.
Right.
But we've gone to them with lots of opportunities in areas where there's the density in terms of population is not as great, but they look at the use case and they're more than happy to build, expand their network and build in those areas. Remember, it's not an extremely expensive network to build.
Yeah.
It's a low frequency, low power, long range. We're talking hundreds of kilometers. So they're very, very open to build.
And obviously, there's a huge opportunity in agriculture.
Absolutely.
Which is an area that hasn't really been well covered by the mobile.
And we're focusing on that agriculture.
Yeah. Yeah.
Humidity, soil sensors,
right.
Animal management, no, massive, massive.
Yeah. Great. Does your IoT business have a specific name? Have you housed it in a...
No, not yet.
Not yet.
No,
okay.
We're busy. I think it's because we're busy developing the platforms,
okay.
Both the applications, the platforms, the workflows behind it. And our first product will be available on the 23rd of March.
Okay. And
actually,
what is that, as a matter of interest?
We're actually launching a agricultural bundle at the WRSA conference up in Limpopo.
Okay.
That's Wildlife Ranching South Africa. And there's four components. The one is wildlife tracking, asset tracking, water level metering, and then the fourth one we're still debating should it be to do with a soil measurement or with safety. But we think we're leaning towards safety. Mm-hmm. If you can put an IoT device on every single gate,
yes.
And tell the farmer when that gate is opened or closed. In the past, the technology was just too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Today, you can get those devices for 500 Rand. And I think given the importance of security for farmers, personal security as well as livestock security, that would be the fourth component that we will be launching.
Okay. Now, this one sounds very exciting. I understand that Vox is developing a strategy in the digital entertainment space. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. Again, I think Showmax, Box Office, Netflix, Squeeze, it's all of the exact same. I mean, you know, the problem with Netflix, there's so much to pick from that it takes you 40 minutes to select your movie. Regardless of the fact that it's 100 Rand, it's all old stuff. The same look at Showmax, it's old, between 5 and 10 years. There's no new content.
Certainly on the movie side of things.
Definitely, absolutely on the movie side of things. So we believe there's a market, a niche market, where we can target specific nationalities, let's say Portuguese, put together a bouquet of product or movies that's high definition, brand new, aimed at that specific market. And we're going to go to the market with that strategy to say, again, we're not going to compete with Netflix, Showmax, Hulu, etc. We're going to say the Portuguese community in South Africa, the only way they watch their content today is off YouTube.
Or DSTV.
Yeah,
and they've got the Portuguese and Indian specific channels.
Correct, yeah. But we're going to take that much further,
okay,
and say how many groups have we got, and let's deliver real or relevant content to those groups.
Right.
It's not a mass market deployment, very specific, very aggressively priced, and ultimately we will bundle that with our FTTH solutions, so that mm-hmm. will assist us to cross-sell, and we will also look at zero rating, the data. If associated with our over-the-top video on demand play.
Okay. So are you specifically looking at the Portuguese community? What other communities have
Bangladesh,
you
Bangladesh, Czech, Spanish, Portuguese, Indian, but the focus will be on new content.
Right.
Where if you look at what's available today on DSTV, there's a lot of old content still. Yes, it might be a channel dedicated to them, but it's old content.
Okay.
And that's where, you know, I think if you put a well-priced product to the market, you will see them churn away from DSTV to our solution just because of the content.
Right. Okay. Now, the content game is quite different from the telecommunications game. Are you going to be hiring a team that can go negotiate content rights? How's it going to work?
Every player in South Africa that got into that game, I think, lost millions.
Yes.
And, I mean, we can name them. So the world is changing out there. You know, in the old days, you had to go to Disney and commit $7 million.
Yes.
If you sold one subscription or 100 subscriptions, that was irrelevant to them. You had to put that commitment down. There's a lot of content providers today that's happy to sell you content for a territory, for a period of time. So I don't need to buy it for the whole year. We can buy it for 30 days,
right.
45 days, 6 months, only for South Africa, not for the whole of Africa. And I see that mindset is now becoming very disruptive to the old bigger movie houses,
yeah.
Universal, etc. And they've got to also change their strategy and the way they go to market. Otherwise, they will be hurt in time. Sport is unfortunately still a big issue. Our video on demand product won't have a sports channel. It mm-hmm. will be purely focused on the entertainment as a start.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll go into the likes of a Discovery, BBC, etc., and then ultimately some selected sports.
Right.
So but not mainstream right now. Okay. That's not our
target. You're not going to be competing with Jose dos Santos for the Rugby World Cup, right?
No.
So what's your thinking around rolling this out? Are you going to do a set-top box?
We would prefer to roll it out only as an application.
Uh-huh.
So you can have any set-top box you want to. Go and buy one at any of the outlets. Download our app. Download our app on your phone, on your smart TV. Ultimately, we would like all the mainstream smart TVs to be preloaded with the app, your LGs, Hisense, Samsung, etc. But that will come in time. Right now, it's to run it over an app. I just think to be responsible for the maintenance and upkeep and to force a customer to buy your set-top box, that, in my opinion, is not the smart way to go. Give the customer choice.
Right. So specialization in niche markets, are there any plans by Vox to launch more of a generalized entertainment service that appeals to more of a mass market?
No. My feeling, and you know, Duncan, you know us well enough that everything we take on. Mm. We do it in a very, very focused approach. When we said we're going to launch FTTH, it was toeing the water. We got 80% penetration, and then we said, right, we're starting to learn, and now let's grow. Same with FTTB, same with IoT. You can't be everything to everybody. And if you talk about the digital world, I mean, the moment you generalize, you're competing with Showmax, Box Office, Netflix. There's no way that's not our target market.
Right.
Specialized, niche, top quality, great user experience.
So what's the time frame we're looking at here for launch?
Third or fourth quarter.
Okay.
So it'll be August, September, there or thereabout.
Does the platform have a name yet?
No.
Not yet. Okay. Watch the space.
Again, it will be done in conjunction with partners in the UK, partners locally, and it's taking the niche offering of each of these and combining it onto a consolidated platform.
Right. So you'll download one app and then select the services you want.
Yes.
Okay. You mentioned bundling with FTTH. Would that be a free value add for buying an FTTH service, or would it be?
I think the higher packages.
Yeah.
Where we know the customer is taking a voice service, a hosting service, a mobile data service, there it's very easy to add that to the bundle.
Right.
The bottom end packages, there's not room to really include that. I mean, if a customer is not keen to pay for the data that he uses, we will include it as a standalone service at the bottom end packages.
Right.
Top end ideas to zero rated.
Okay. Lastly, Jacques, I understand that you're doing some quite interesting things around artificial intelligence and closed or CCTV services around your Guardian Eye product. Tell us about that.
Right, so let's just recap a bit. Guardian Eye for the last few years was a black screen CCTV monitoring service. So you arm your alarm at your office. Our agents will get a notification that office has now been armed. He or she will be looking at a black screen up until an alarm is triggered.
Right.
The purpose of that service we sold was to advise and inform the armed reaction units of exactly what's happening on that site. So is it a false alarm? Don't bother to go out. Or if it's a real alarm, Mr. Armed Security or Armed Guarding Solution, yes, there's four people with yellow jerseys and AK-47 in the front yard. So they know what to expect when they get there. I think that product has become run-of-the-mill mainstream, not very exciting. But what had happened last year is we underestimated the ability of analyzing and running analytics and self-learning tools on the back of video footage. And what we've now done is we've taken what used to be purely targeted at a security market. We've now created a product that can be used in retail, and I'll explain that by means of an example. All shopping centers have got cameras monitoring the aisles, every single shopping center. We can take that video feed, bring it into our CCTV platform, and we can then start filtering and say, tell me how many males were there, how many females were there, how many kids were there, how many people wearing red jerseys were there. So suddenly you can now start profiling your audience and change, you know, how the shops are laid out. We can give a customer information about the dwell time. I'll give you another example. We monitor certain eye sites, cellular eye sites. Perfect place to put some PTZ cameras on, and we can do traffic count and heat map and provide information back to the municipalities to say, guys, there's congestion always on this specific road between these times. We need to change the people manning the intersections. We need to add a separate lane for bicycles or a pedestrian lane. So it's all about taking video footage and applying analytics. The nice thing for us, 3 hours worth of video footage can be condensed and labeled in 53 seconds. So I can go to a customer and say, whatever happened here in 3 hours, within 53 seconds, you can get an exact view of that. Hmm. Or 6 hours, 2 minutes, et cetera, et cetera. So it's taken the Guardian Eye service offering to a next level. And I just think if you don't keep on, as a guarding service or monitoring service, if you don't keep on adding these kind of value adds, your right to exist will diminish. And I think Vox's agility and our agile approach to the market is allowing us to continuously take whatever we've got as a basis and just add on top of that.
Mm. Before I let you go, Jacques, obviously Vox Telecom is a privately held company now. You used to be listed on the JSE many years ago. I'm not sure if you can share any numbers in terms of the growth of the business over the last year, just to give us some color on that. Is there any thought at all of possibly going back to the market again at some point?
So, Duncan, I think, well, let's start with the first part of your question. We had a phenomenal year last year. You know, we've invested heavily over the last 2 years into various areas of the business. We've grown the sales team to about 330-odd people. We've invested into infrastructure. We've spent a huge amount of money on our OSS, BSS systems to drive automation. And the fact that we saw a 30% growth on EBITDA last year tells me we've been doing the right things. I think the staff's excited. They can see new products being launched all the time. That hard work is now paying off. And, you know, if you look at the economy as a whole last year, I don't think there's many companies that grew their profit line with 30%. Mm. So I can only say well done to all the teams that had a part to play. You know, it was hard work when times were tough and the economy was turning downward and there was political instability. We took a chance and said, guys, this is now prime time to invest. We convinced our shareholders. The shareholders backed the entire team, all 1,400 staff members. And yeah, today we can look back and say, well done, you know, 30% growth. Is there an opportunity to go or talk to go back to the market? I always say to the staff that any company that performs this way is deemed to be sexy, and anybody or anything that's sexy will be pursued. So there's lots of people talking to Vox all the time. Can we JV? Can we buy? I just think we're having so much fun growing the business right now. I don't think we're ready to sell. But if the right partner comes across, I think the shareholders will consider it.
Yeah. Yeah. Who are the principal shareholders? Just remind us.
Metia, private equity. Yeah. Investec, private equity, or actually IEP, and Rand Merchant Bank, private equity.
And there's no pressure from their side to exit or to look at a listing as a way out or anything like that?
Not at this point in time. No. Okay. But again, if someone comes and says, listen, we value the business, we can extract synergies, we can really accelerate the growth, I guess they will be irresponsible not to look at it.
Sure, sure.
I would hope that we can buy rather than sell.
Well, you've made it clear already in this interview that you are on the acquisition trail. So always a pleasure, Jacques. Great to chat to you. Jacques Du Toit is CEO of Vox. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Duncan.